Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's a minute past the hour on this, the fifth day of May, 2016. Cinco de Mayo, as it is known in popular culture. It's a cheap excuse for bad faux Mexican restaurants to sell margaritas made with really terrible tequila. Probably Cuervo Gold, that they then mark up because it's Cuervo, which is disgusting. We still remember Bart Kopp. We still remember. But celebrate that as you will, as you wish. It celebrates a brief Mexican victory over French forces a long time ago, and is certainly not Mexican Independence Day. So, yeah, happy fifth day of May. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and have a conversation with be part of the real-time multimedia live extravaganza, madcap that it is, with the occupants thereof. Good evening to Anatole and Jug of Punch, Labor Man and Texas Tea, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Lottie will probably be along shortly. Thank you very kindly, Thomas over at FYINation.com. I hear you loud and clear. this just in, courtesy of Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. Donald Trump ate a taco salad and announced he loves the Hispanics. I'll have a Hispanic salad. Hold the rapists. This really is where we are, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and that means there's going to be a lot of, we'll probably go through a half a case of hockey pucks at least per person this evening. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and I apologize for my unplanned absence yesterday. Agnes had a pair of procedures, scheduled at the local dock in a box, and it was scheduled, and I didn't think anything of it. It was scheduled for noon. Be there at 11:30. We were. Starts at noon, and they didn't call her back till sometime after 2, and they weren't done with the procedure till sometime after 4, and she hadn't sobered up enough for me to take her home, and we got home sometime after 6, and I don't know what you know about that so-called conscious sedation, but if the CIA isn't using this stuff, I'll eat a shoe, I didn't feel really comfortable getting more than 2 or 3 feet away from Agnes for the last 12, 14 hours, because it takes a while. You know, they tell you you're okay to go home, but they also say, you know, don't make any big decisions, don't go on the home shopping network, do not shop online, don't operate heavy machinery, don't do any child care. And they're not lying. And that stuff, you know, makes you completely forget. You lose an entire 24-hour period on that stuff. It's called Versed. chemically, it's a kissing cousin to Valium and that type stuff. But it wipes your hard drive for 24 hours. And so, like I said, I felt like I was better off being close at hand for Agnes, and that's what we did. So my apologies for yesterday, but I want to, we would have entered last night with a $400 fundraising hole, and I want to extend very kind thanks to our subscribers who have kept it from being as bad as it could be, and extend thanks to our dear friend Chris in Germany. And Chris provided a Have a Show on Me in the name of Molly. Molly, her longtime her longtime furry friend, who died a couple of nights ago, having gotten into something bad. Still don't know what, but it took her life. And so Chris kindly provided a Have a Show on Me in memory of Molly, her much beloved and now much missed cat. And so thank you Chris, thank you very much indeed. And so that leaves us only with a $400 fundraising hole. Actually, it is $350, a $350 fundraising hole this evening. And that's kind of been the story of the beginning of May. Fundraising's been difficult for the last several months, and it's always that way during political years. The presidential years in particular. So, yeah, 10 at 35, 35 at 10, and every... 1 at 350, 2 at 175, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the PayPal button, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. That's where you go to sign in and register your kind contribution, your gift that keeps all of this going, because... This is not a for-profit enterprise. We're also not a 501c3, because we do politics and we actually try to follow the law. Granted, 501c3 religious organizations flout it, but we don't. So we don't try to take advantage of the commons, and then pretend that we're somehow better. You know, we don't behave like a religion. So you fill out the form, and we're always looking for another $10 a month subscriber. We'd like to get to 100 of those. Ultimately, the goal is to get to 400. But just getting to 100 would be a really, really big deal. 100 $10 a month subscribers helps out a lot, especially when we, you know, get into holes and things like that. If you'd like to be, just fill out the front page, click however much you want it to be monthly, click the box that says make this a monthly contribution, and go and get onto the next screen. If you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, and many of you do, checks and money orders can be mailed to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And maybe just shoot me an email, and I'll let Boss Man Wayne know that he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck when he goes in to check out the mailbox, and hopefully and takes his axe handle with him in case he runs into the occasional Klansman, which he hasn't yet. They're sneaky, those Klansmen. So we've gotten that out of the way, I hope, and maybe it'll clear. No, Brother Deacon Asa, Cuervo is not the nectar of the gods. It is the gasoline of the gods, or perhaps the kerosene of the gods. Brother Deacon Asa is an aficionado of good, fine tequila, and he is just fun, and he knows how awful Cuervo really, really, truly is. All right, so like I said, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Where to begin? Um, I know where I'm tempted to begin, but I'm not. No, I'm going to begin with a true story of who America, who we really are as a nation. It's the true story of, as Queen of the Minions Carol Baker describes him, a pustule on the ball sack of America. Naturally, this story arises in South Carolina, Stan. It's the story of a disabled woman stranded on the side of an interstate highway. Stranded on the side of an interstate highway in Asheville, North Carolina, after an auto accident. Cassie McQuaid was involved in that car crash. She, among other things, suffers from psoriatic arthritis, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, and early-stage Crohn's disease. She has a handicapped placard on her car, on her rearview mirror, and she is, in fact, legally disabled. And she called for help after the car wreck and waited about, 45 minutes. When along came Ken Shoup Merkin of the greatest country in the history of the universe, in the world today, on earth, forever, hallelujah, amen. Glory. Ken Shoup owns Shoupy Max Towing down in South Carolina, Stan. And he showed up after about 45 minutes up near Asheville, North Carolina. And he's apparently the regular family mechanic. Cassie McQuaid has been to him before and paid him cash money. So he drove all the way up there, 45 minutes, and started to hook up Cassie McQuaid's car to his tow truck. And then for some reason or another, he walked around back of the car, I guess to make sure the car wasn't dragging or nothing, where he saw, ominous music, a Bernie Sanders sticker. And then he looked in the back glass where he saw another Bernie Sanders sign. And after he sees that, he walks back around and he looks at Cassie McQuaid and says, "I can't tow you." And Cassie McQuaid says, "Why? Is there something wrong with the car that makes it untowable?" And he said, "No, you're a Bernie supporter." To which Cassie McQuaid replied, "Wait, really?" And he said, "Yes, ma'am." And then he just walks away. Walks away. And he gets in his tow truck and leaves an injured, disabled woman with a damaged car stranded on the side of the interstate. Now, when pressed for an explanation why he would do this to a disabled woman stranded in a disabled automobile on the side of the interstate, guess who gets all the glory? Well, naturally, all the glory goes to God. I know, it's not Wednesday. I got to get it out of my system. Something came over me. I think the Lord came to me and he just said, "Get in the truck and leave." And when I got in my truck, you know, I was so proud because I felt like I finally drew a line in the sand and stood up for what I believed. And then he took it another step. Apparently, God is also a financial advisor. "Every business dealing in recent history with a socialist-minded person, I have not gotten paid. I own this truck. It says Shoupy, not Freebie.
Every time I deal with these people, I get burned with an E, not a U. And then they said, yeah, but she was disabled. I said, well, I didn't see nothing saying she was disabled. Had she been disabled, would I have towed her car? No, ma'am. I would have pulled forward and sat there with her to make sure she's okay till another wrecker service showed up to get her home safely, but I still would not have towed her car. I stand by my decision, and I would do it again today if the opportunity presented itself. I respect their beliefs, and I hope they respect my views. So now, down in Dixie, down in the Confederacy, and, you know, it's not like this guy's got an I'm with her sticker on his truck or anything. He's not a hilarian, okay? He's probably a T-rumper. Because remember, T-rump mocks people openly who have disabilities. But you know what? Chew on this for a minute. Dude is going to get more business, not less, out of this. Has he been on Hannity yet? Has O'Reilly had him on? Has he complained of his Christian persecution to Megyn Kelly yet? No, this will be big money. This will be great for his business. I wonder if he'd bother to point us to that verse in the Gospels that tells him to leave stranded disabled people alone on the side of the interstate, stranded disabled people who are just sitting there hoping against hope that her Crohn's disease doesn't flare up in such a stressful situation. I'd like to know the Bible verse that justifies that, because I can think of some. I know lots of Bible stories. I was dipped by the heel in that shit when I was a child. I mean, there's the Good Samaritan. You know, the guy gets waylaid and robbed along the road, and he's laying there in a ditch, and he's beat all to hell, and some good upstanding Yahweh-fearing, Torah-believing Pharisees and Sadducees come by, but no, screw him. I mean, they might touch blood, and then they'd be unclean, and then, right. And finally, a Samaritan, the most hated outcast among the people of that day and that time, comes along, and he sees a guy beat all to hell in a ditch, and he says, I got to help this guy. And so he gets him out of the ditch and takes him to a nearby inn and says, you know, just nurse him back to health, I'll pay. And oddly enough, the guy in the ditch didn't go, oh no, do not help me, you filthy Samaritan. Well, I guess Shoupi's gospel doesn't have the end of the Good Samaritan story. It doesn't have the part with the Samaritan in it. It just has the good, God-fearing, upstanding Pilate voters walking past and saying, yes, he is a T-rumper. But let's understand, okay? Let's get this all the way down into our bones. That man is America. That man is who we are. oh, sure, you'll have a feel-good story here and there, you know, or something you'll see on Facebook about a big brutish-looking dog who snuggles a little wounded kitty cat, and you'll go, oh. But that guy is who we are. Grasping, gouging, digging, scraping, screwing, anything for a buck, anything for a moment's fame. Putting his politics of viciousness ahead of his common humanity. Yeah, I agree. I agree. Robert in Australia says, well, he says the same thing that Dr. Spicoli says.
You dick!
Exactly. And yeah, he did apparently. Yeah, apparently he knew the parable of the good, because Robert asked, did this person ever hear the parable of the good Samaritan? Yeah, he just didn't hear the part with the Samaritan in it. He heard the part where everybody walked on by because they somehow didn't approve of the beat up guy in the gutter, in the ditch. This is us. This is we. Look at the because I did. I went and looked at some vote totals up to the present moment. Look at the millions upon millions upon millions of Americans who have run out and voted for Donald Trump in the primary system. They did it in New York. They did it in Pennsylvania. They did it in Alabama. They did it in Arizona. They voted for him in Illinois. They voted for him in Indiana. We have got to come to grips that we who live in this country share it with a lot of mean-spirited, rotten, ignorant, hateful, vicious, grasping, grabbing, creatures who outnumber us. We're not a good people. We run around telling ourselves, we tell ourselves constantly, and it gets reinforced in the for-profit media, how good we are. And yet there is, I believe, a Bible verse somewhere that says, don't talk about how good you are. For all is corruption, right? And come November, there's going to be a referendum. Come November, there's going to be an IQ test, nationally administered. And we will find out exactly who we are. We'll find out if we're who, you know. It's going to be that whole Denny Green thing. They were who we thought they were. Because, of course, the reason Shoopy decided to leave an innocent woman stranded on the side of the interstate was because freedom. He's just that free. This is who we are, all the way down to the ground. And for anyone, I know there are people out there, oh, come on, Bob! Hillary's gonna mop the floor with him. And there's only one problem, she may not. I'm looking at a Daily Kos article from May the 2nd. Latest Reuters data shows Hillary losing to Trump, but Bernie wins. Rolling averages of poll data over the course of several days. Back in March, Hillary Clinton 41%, Donald Trump 39.5%, margin of error 3-5%. Other wouldn't vote, refused poll 19.2%. We may find out exactly who we are in November. Because this country has always, or for a very long time, long enough that it was warned of back during the Second World War and before, this country has a taste for fascism. This country, well, there's something about fascism that just appeals to us. You know, twisting the screws on people we deem to be unworthy. And I don't give a good goddamn what any of the professionally wrong people say. Donald Trump is a fascist. Pure, plain, and simple. Bernie Sanders was in West Virginia today, so was T. Rump. T. Rump got the big space in downtown Charleston. Bernie got the South Charleston Rec Center, I believe. And Hillary wouldn't have dared to try to book either one of them because there would have been more echo than people. I remain convinced, and you know what, if I'm an outlier, that's fine. I remain convinced that if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, we will be saying President Trump before we know what hit us. 50% of the Democrats, okay, for whatever reason, some of which reasons are absolute, undeniable, unalloyed crap, 50% of the Democrats voting in the Indiana primary on Tuesday said they do not trust Hillary Clinton to be a truth teller. And that's not an extraordinary number. That number is pretty much national. And I freely acknowledge that there is a 25-year-old Republican-funded GOP filth machine that runs on 200-proof pure hatred, whose only purpose is to destroy Hillary Clinton and keep her out of the White House for a variety of reasons, much of which are misogyny and sexism. And general Clinton derangement syndrome. But complaining about the source of the reality does not affect the reality. And in the time between now and November, nor between the shorter period between the convention and November, she is not going to change 50% of 50% of America's mind into thinking that she is a truth teller. That's sad. Sadder still, that will likely be the nominee of the Democratic Party. This time in 1980, this time of year, just as Hillary does, in some polls. Jimmy Carter had a 10-point lead on Ronald Reagan. How'd that work out? And, you know, I don't care how many trolls David Brock pays to slime Bernie supporters online. It doesn't change the facts on the ground. I also personally doubt if she will have the nomination locked up in terms of pledged delegates by the end of the California primary. Maybe I'll be wrong. If I am, I'll admit it. But the numbers definitely favor Senator Sanders in every one of the remaining primaries. Now, come Tuesday, I'm going to go and vote for Bernie here in West Virginia. Nothing has changed my opinion on that. And I'm going to vote for the gubernatorial candidate who has endorsed Bernie, namely Jeff Kessler. And I'm going to pay careful attention down ballot because I'm funny that way. And I'm not going to vote for any old guard Democrats. We've got a nonagenarian running for House of Delegates here in Fayette County. He was hard pressed to even be able to fill out his own paperwork a couple of weeks ago at the county convention. Not going to vote for him. He's got name recognition because he was a state senator here for since God was a baby. Not going to vote for him. I'm going to look for young people. I'm going to look for people on the ballot to whom the future belongs. I'm not going to vote for a Jesused up guy who calls himself a liberal, but at the same time can't come up with enough sleazy things to say about the LGBT community. Nope, not him either. Now, granted, Paul Ryan announced today that he is not prepared. Now, Paul Ryan's not running for president. You can tell he's not running for president because he keeps releasing presidential campaign ads. But the Speaker of the House, Paul Eddie Munster, zombie-eyed Granny Starver, Ryan says he's not prepared at this time to support T-Rump. Appearing on Chicken Noodle News with incisive video journalist Jake Tapper, he said, I don't want to underplay what he accomplished talking about T-Rump. We hope that our nominee aspires to be Lincoln and Reagan-esque, appeals to a vast majority of Americans. Well, the Lincoln ship sailed a long time ago and sank. And Reagan-esque? Really? You want Trump to behave like he's losing his mind? And then, you know, Mitch McConnell, however, is scared to death of T-Rump and announced his undying support. But what I find funny is Paul Ryan's the bogus vision of what the Republican Party is. If a person wants to be the nominee of the Republican Party, there can be no evasion and no games. They must reject any group or cause that is built on bigotry. This party does not prey on people's prejudices. We appeal to their highest ideals. This is the party of Lincoln, said a guy who belongs to a party whose presidential candidate gave us the Willie Horton ad. You best be careful, Paul Ryan, or you might get your sorry ass straight up punked by T-Rump. But there's a fascist movement in this country, and Trump is at its head. and they're a violent lot. And they think nothing of kicking the living daylights of anybody out of anybody with whom they disagree. This isn't a brand of fascism that's going to look like something out of the history books. This is going to be the all-new American version of fascism. We are a sad, sick, and sorry people. Not all of us. You know, not everybody, Bob. No, not everybody. It's almost impossible for a country to be comprised of this size to be comprised of everybody of anything. But there are damn sure enough T-rumpers and Hillary haters to render this country a nightmare hellscape. Gosh, Bob, you're such a little ray of sunshine this evening. Yeah, I know, right? According to the Associated Press, as of 6:07 p.m., thank you, Larry, for the email. Authorities say one person has been killed and another wounded in a shooting at a high school in suburban Washington. The Prince George's County Fire and EMS Department says the shooting took place Thursday afternoon at High Point High School in Beltsville, Maryland. The county police department said on its Twitter account that an adult was fatally shot and the incident appears to be domestically related. Public schools spokeswoman Sherry Johnson says no students or staff were injured. She didn't know what, if any, activities were going on at the school at the time of the shooting. Fire department spokesman Mark Brady says the wounded person suffered injuries that are not believed to be life-threatening. He provided the information in a recording on his voicemail. That is all the information we have at this time. Meanwhile, back here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, where we are the dystopian future of America, canary in the coal mine, in little bitty, tiny, itsy-bitsy Clay County, West Virginia, which shares a common border with the county wherein I reside, schools are closed for the remainder of the week. Schools were shut down and cleared out yesterday. Because information became available to school officials there that a group of students had entered into a conspiracy, and I don't just throw that word around, had entered into a conspiracy to commit what is being described as a Columbine-like massacre at their school. Has this made the National Wires? This is kind of terrifying. Who am I kidding? It's a lot terrifying. Apparently, a group of students had decided that on April 20th past, they were going to pull a Columbine, you know, on the anniversary thereof. And the local officials got wind of it after the fact and went on to say that they thought that the reason they didn't go with the April 20th date is because they were hoping to recruit more students to their cause. The Charleston Gazette reporting, school administrators at Clay County Middle School, did you get that part? Clay County Middle School. Now, in West Virginia, we define that as grades 5 through 8. A middle school student made threats about shooting people at the school on April 20th. Clay County Superintendent of Schools Kenneth Tanner said it's very scary, very sick. The plan was to go through classrooms and shoot as many students and staff as they could. Thus far, they do not have a motive. He said by the end of last week, school officials knew that the threats were not a hoax. He said school officials made the decision to close schools for the rest of the week based on additional information they'd received Tuesday and would not describe that information. My belief is if they had their resources, they would have tried it. He said they did have access to some guns. Well, damn, come on, really? Some guns in West Virginia? Some guns? A lot of guns! The kids are just scared to death, he said. The past week has been chaos. Michelle Dayton has a son and stepdaughter in sixth grade at the school. She didn't find out about the threat until last Friday when she heard a rumor and then saw a story on her Facebook posted by a TV news channel. Then, Tuesday, she found out through a text message that six West Virginia State Police troopers were at the school. She went to the school to pull her kids out, and school staff were very rude, she claimed. They huffed and puffed and said, "Oh my God," she said. "It was just like I was being ridiculous." One little girl told her son and stepdaughter that their names were found on a hit list in a school bathroom. So right now, that particular middle school in Clay County, West Virginia, doesn't look like too many parents are going to be sending their kids back there for a while yet. And then this kind of bizarre statement. Superintendent Tanner said school officials closed all Clay schools, not just the middle school, based on budget concerns. He said the middle school students would have to make up the days at the end of the year, and the school system can't afford to have buses run 183 days, both this week for high school and elementary school students, and then 3 extra days at the end of the year for the middle school students alone. Well, I'm glad the budget is being considered. But consider that the budget has to be considered, because this is West Virginia. We're a mono economy. We're falling apart at the seams, and we've got a teabagger legislature that couldn't be bothered to pass a budget. This is a hopeless place where bombs go off over top of the homes where children live, where children get the snot beaten out of them if they say that they disapprove of the coal industry, where there is no hope for children because the coal industry is dying of a sort. I mean, there's going to continue to be a coal industry, but there's not going to be that many jobs because it doesn't take that many actual human beings to do the filthy work that the coal industry does now. And by the way, this month, it as a matter of law, thanks, teabagger legislature, anybody with the money to get it on the table who's 21 years on the counter, who's 21 years or older in age, can have themselves a freedom protector, which they can lock and load and stick in their pocket or their purse or their freedom protector bra and go most anywhere they want to go until the gun falls out and the gun just goes off and oops, blam, pray. Welcome to my world. Meanwhile, if we dare look outside the boundaries of the United States of America, we might find a few other problems elsewhere on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Up in the probably not nearly as damp as he would like it to be north, Ron informs me the fire in Fort McMurray, Alberta grew by 800% over the past 24 hours. That's 325 square miles. Hell on earth. Flames 500 feet high on fronts a mile wide. Embers carried in the strong updrafts have ignited an additional 40-plus fires in the surrounding area. So far, the downtown area, hospital, and airport have been spared, but all it would take is a change of wind direction. It's definitely fire season out west. British Columbia has more than 200 fires currently burning. Alberta has 350-plus, and Saskatchewan has more than 100. They're getting a little nervous in Canada. Many of these are in areas where no one lives, and the provinces will probably let them burn naturally, i.e. until they run out of fuel or the rain returns. We now return you to your regular programming. And, of course, the fact that May has seen temperatures north of 90 degrees Fahrenheit in northern Alberta, the fact that there's stuff been left on the forest floor that is, for all intents and purposes, flash paper tinder. Climate change, in other words, has absolutely nothing to do with this. What would happen flames reach the tar sands? Will that stuff burn in the ground, or will it go out? But that's a city of 80 to 100,000 people, all of whom have been evacuated. And evacuating got really interesting because the road leading out was covered in fire. Now, the New York Times had a story a couple of days ago about an island in Terrebonne Parish that has been declared an actual, real-life, no-kidding climate change disaster area, because it's going to be underwater real soon, and the Department of Housing and Urban Development approved $45 million in resources to relocate the entire population of the island, which is down considerably now since the soil's been made saline, and much of the fruit trees and anything that wants to grow in the soil won't, because salt water is not good irrigation material. But remember, climate change isn't real. Not real here in Merca, neither. Of course. And it's especially not real here in Almost Level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, otherwise known as the cradle of climate change. Had to burn a lot of coal to up the atmosphere and the planet as much as we have. And over the course of the last 125 years or so, a whole lot, maybe even, dare I say, a majority of the coal that's done the up has come from rat chair. Bernie Sanders went to McDowell County today. Oddly enough, Don Blankenship was not standing outside with a bunch of T-rumpers in the rain protesting him. At the Five Loaves and Two Fishes food pantry in Kimball, West Virginia, Bernie Sanders became the first presidential candidate since John F. Kennedy to visit McDowell County. There he was addressed by Erica Lucas. Not Bo Copley, who wanted him to come to the Laying on a Hands tent revival, because after all, you know, Bernie Sanders is a Jew and he's going to hell anyway. No, Erica Lucas addressed Senator Sanders. She said, talking about being poor, she said, the stress is unbearable living in poverty, and you don't have anything else, so either you take drugs or you fight through. She's chosen to fight through. She's a clerk at the library, the public library in Welch, such as it is. That's the county seat of McDowell County. She's a full-time student, too. She's trying to get something in the way of an education that will allow her to better herself. There in the cradle of climate change, she heats her home with a single wood stove in the winter. She says, I can see my breath when I wake up. I know a little about that. There was a panel discussion. A social worker named Sabrina Schrader was there. Tanya Spinella is an elementary school teacher in Welch. And Sam Petsonk is a lawyer. About 240 people sat in the small building to witness the conversation. A lawyer from War, West Virginia, named Rocky Say, said, every crime that we face in this county is in some way related to the drug problem. The drug crisis fuels the poverty problem here. A woman named Samantha Allen, a recovering drug addict, said, how do you get a second chance to turn your life around? If I had a job or things to do or places I could go, it would be a lot easier. Responding, Bernie Sanders said, you can't get a handle on the crime problem until you get a handle on the drug problem. You're not going to get a handle on the drug problem unless you deal with the economic issues that are leading to the despair and the hopelessness that people are dealing with. Bernie went on to say that everybody having access to health care would be critical. And then Ms. Spinella was asked if free college tuition would make a difference, and she said it will allow them to dream bigger, her students, than they have ever dreamed. You want to know how bad it is? And ask yourself, how bad must it be? Here's how bad it is in McDowell County. Walmart left McDowell County. Packed up and left. And that meant the Five Loaves and Two Fishes food pantry lost its primary source of canned goods for feeding the poor. Bernie went on to say, a great nation is judged not by how many millionaires it has or how many nuclear weapons it has. It is judged by how well it treats its weakest and most vulnerable. A big crowd gathered again in South Charleston. People coming from as far away as Johnson City, Tennessee, to see Bernie in South Charleston, West Virginia. Longtime Democratic activist Deborah D.L. Hamilton said, I'm an activist and also an active Democrat, and Bernie combines every sign I've ever carried with the real possibility of a future to believe in. West Virginia needs a future to believe in. Because the present, not so much. And I know I'm supposed to have just simply given up and acknowledged the inevitability of Hillary Clinton. But for the sake of places like Welch and McDowell County, West Virginia, and Mingo County, West Virginia, and yeah, my own county here, I'm not giving up. I'll vote for her if that's the choice that I'm left with. Between her and Trump. But we would be a far wiser nation to give the banner to Bernie to carry. And that possibility, though narrow, yet exists. It depends entirely on how badly places like Oregon and California, New Mexico, West Virginia, New Jersey, and Kentucky want to heal this wounded land. It really is that simple. Thank you very kindly to Matthew. Thank you, Matthew, for getting us started this evening. We've got $300 to go in fundraising now. Thank you very kindly. That's a big bite out of the fundraising deficit. Thank you, Matthew. Indeed. Note coming from Scott and Punky in San Diego. Scott says, I stopped driving years ago, but if I still did drive, I'd not only have a Bernie sticker on the car, but one of these too. Got to send a message to the dickhead tow truck drivers of the world. I say be defiant and stick it right in their face. And what he refers to is a sticker that says Trump, because America needs more bombast, bluster, and bullshit. Amen. Of course, that'll get your tires slashed by a T-rumper. One puts a Bernie sticker on one's car at one's peril. Look! Goddamn T-rumper to leave you to bleed out on the side of the road. Because that's how they're going to make America great again. Way up north, Ron says, I believe the answer to West Virginia's drug problem is hope. Right now, there's none in places like Clay and Welch and 100 other small towns in that part of the state. I've been told that I have a way with words, but it's been a steepening slope for all of my life, and it saddens me in a way I can't describe. No, I dare say, and I know that Bernie has seen a lot of America over the course of the last year, but I dare say he's probably not seen anything like what he saw today in McDowell County. It is hard to look upon the absolute social collapse of an entire region. It is painful. And you can't, and faith without works is dead, and hope without plans is too. One of the things that I find particularly interesting is that in this election season, mountaintop removal has completely disappeared. It's almost like it isn't happening. It's over. They're not doing that anymore. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. But I'm okay with Bernie not talking about it because I want Bernie to win this primary and I know where Bernie stands or has stood, and I have no reason to think he's changed his position. What I find interesting is that no one asked Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton about it, and she had already in her nest with that we're going to put all the coal miners out of work remark. You know, it's not that she sticks her foot in her mouth. That's not what, no, we know that. It's how she's going to get the other one in there with it and clarify. And, oh, that was taken out of context. Well, I don't buy that argument unless it really is taken out of context. And I heard that statement when it was made live. It wasn't taken out of context. What she means by taken out of context is that all the rest of the gobbledygook on the front and the back ends of it were not included at the same time. Oof. So here we are at the close of the filibobster for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. We are by no means anywhere near being out or done with all of our thorns. Oh, no. No. We got lots of fun yet. Now, granted, Mr. Shoopy will probably become a conservative T-Rumper hero, and we'll have a spate of people doing lousy things to people with Bernie stickers on their cars. But at least, and we can take some pleasure in the fact that the so-called social media have begun to dole out a little bit of grief to Super Shoopy. Fun, huh? Oh, and thank you very kindly. We have a $75 challenge on the table. 75 bucks. The next 75 that come in will get doubled, so that between Matthew and the challenge, and that'll put us $200 of the $350 we need to do for fundraising this evening. So 75 bucks will be doubled by the next 75 bucks get doubled. It get you know, 5, 10, 10, 20, you know, it goes up to 75 bucks. So bear that in mind as we work through the next couple of hours of the program. It is, in fact, the reality show known as Merca. We've all got tickets, and like the people in Plato's cave, nobody gets to leave. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside.
It's Thursday, May 5, 2016.
The people here are devastated. Everyone's devastated. The community is going to be devastated.
Massive wildfire forces evacuations in Canada's tar sands country. Widespread and persistent fracking contamination in North Dakota. California's massive natural gas leak will cost $500 million, plus...
This should not have happened in the first place.
President Obama promises Flint's water crisis will not be forgotten.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
There's no debate about the greenhouse effect, just like there's no debate about gravity. If someone throws a piano off the roof, I don't care what Sarah Palin tells you, get out of the way because it's coming down on your head.
Also, if someone throws Sarah Palin off the roof, get out of the way as well. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, watching these scenes coming out of Alberta, Canada, of people fleeing this amazing fire, it is like Mad Max Fury Road, some of this video. It's extraordinary.
Yes, the catastrophic wildfire in Canada's tar sands oil region. It's the city of Fort McMurray, Alberta. It's been overtaken by a fast-moving wildfire that's been driven by record high temperatures and high winds. All 80,000 residents were evacuated, many saying that both the fast-moving wildfire and the chaotic evacuation were, quote, apocalyptic, and they felt lucky to have escaped alive. The worst is not over, warned Fort McMurray Fire Chief Darby Allen.
I would say it's been the it's been the worst day of my career, and I am, you know, the whole the people here are devastated. Everyone's devastated. The community is going to be devastated.
24 new high temperature records were set in the region on Tuesday alone, with no let-up or rain in the forecast. But some good news, no reports of injuries or deaths yet, and the wildfire so far hasn't reached the open-pit tar sands where the oil company's work camps are now open to house evacuees.
This is where the that tar sands oil was going to be sent down through the Keystone XL pipeline,
right,
from Alberta. How much of this wildfire has to do with global warming, ironically enough?
Well, temperatures right now in the region are about 20 degrees Fahrenheit higher than normal, and scientists have predicted for decades that climate change is going to bring more extreme heat waves and more intense wildfires, and we are now seeing that come to pass.
Right there in tar sands country, just amazing irony. We wish them well, nonetheless. Just amazing.
Florida's coral reefs are dissolving decades earlier than scientists predicted. This is ocean acidification. That's called the evil twin of global warming, when the ocean absorbs our rising carbon dioxide emissions from burning fossil fuels. And that changes the ocean's chemistry, making the water more corrosive to the outer skeletons of animals like corals and shellfish. Florida's reefs provide an estimated $2 billion in tourism and more than 70,000 jobs. In North Dakota, fracking wastewater spills are leaving behind a toxic legacy. Researchers from Duke University found, quote, clear evidence of direct water contamination that they said was, quote, widespread and persistent, including high levels of lead, selenium, and radioactive radium that persist even after cleanup of oil wastewater spills. According to AP, more than 22,000 such oil wastewater spills have been documented in North Dakota in the last 6 years. In Southern California, the Porter Ranch Aliso Canyon gas leak, the worst natural gas leak in the nation's history, is going to cost Southern California Gas Company more than $660 million, double previous estimates. The storage facility spewed natural gas for 4 months and forced evacuations of nearby residents. SoCalGas says insurance should cover all those costs. Finally, in his first visit to Flint, Michigan, since revelations that the city's water system had been contaminated with lead for more than 2 years, President Obama promised the residents of Flint, Michigan on Wednesday that he would make sure that the lead contamination crisis would be solved.
I will not rest, and I'm going to make sure that the leaders at every level of government don't rest until every drop of water that flows to your homes is safe to drink and safe to cook with and safe to bathe in. Because That's part of the basic responsibilities of a government in the United States of America.
An independent state probe blamed primarily state officials, and three officials have been indicted. In his remarks, Obama partly blamed an anti-government mindset for ignoring and shortchanging infrastructure issues until after disaster strikes.
Anti-government mindset? We don't have any anti-government mindset in this country. I don't know what you're talking about. By the way, Desi, congratulations. I think this may have been your grimmest Green News report to date in more than 7 years of this. So nice going.
Thanks.
For much more on those grim stories and the other ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Grim News Report.
You got the accent, Joey, the positive. It'll eliminate the negative. That's on to the affirmative.
I don't know. Maybe we need to just change the name to Little Ray of Sunshine Thursday. Between Brad, Desi, and me. God. Well, you know, I don't know. I am told that, yes, tar sand sludge does burn. So it can get more interesting up there on the hellscape. Thank you very kindly to Alma. Just got a note landed here. And it would appear that the $75 challenge has been met by Alma in Corrales. Thank you very kindly. Much, much appreciated. And so that leaves us only $150 to go this evening in our evening's fundraising quest. Thank you very much indeed. I'm informed by Ron in the not nearly damp enough north, I'm not laughing, that the healing powers of the good reverend have returned him to 80% of his usual dulcet voice. That's important. That's very important. We cannot silence the voice of Ottawa. Absolutely not. Oh, burning tar sands, Ron notes. Can you say Centralia, Pennsylvania? No, that's burning coal, damn it. Coal's not tar sands. I mean, come on, let's at least try to keep our poisons in some semblance of order, shall we? Okay, I hope it will provide a giggle, but if it provides a whole body shudder of just grossness, we'll deal with that too. So it's time to set the Wayback Machine for 2013. Time to set the Wayback Machine for Brent Musburger. You remember it was a little more than 3 years ago when, having been allowed to do a college football game, play-by-play, color, whatever, Brent Musburger perved all over the girlfriend of Alabama starting quarterback A.J. McCarron. I mean, I remember way, way, way back, those 3 years ago now, I remember talking with Sandra about this, and we both got the shudders. But this great moments in pervy broadcasting, okay? 2013, Brent Musburger.
When you're a quarterback at Alabama, you see that lovely lady there? She does go to Auburn, I'm going to admit that. But she also, just Alabama, and that's A.J. McCarron's girlfriend, okay? And right there on the right is Dee Dee Bonner. That's AJ Smart. Wow, I'm telling you, quarterbacks, you get all the good looking women. What a beautiful woman. Wow. AJ's doing some things right down there. You're a young.
Okay, so you've got that, right? You remember that. And you're probably just re-shivering, because, I mean, just listening to the audio of him perving all over her, you can almost imagine the raincoat that he's wearing. He's sort of stained and old and maybe moth-eaten a little bit. And, hey, kid, look. There are some basic rules among broadcasters, especially radio types, who often have great big microphones hanging right in front of their faces, like I do now. Maybe it's a Shure RE20 or a Shure RE27ND, or an Electro Voice RE20 or an Electro Voice RE27ND. Maybe it's a Shure SM7B. Maybe it's the really amazing highfalutin, first of its kind, brand new for the last year or so, Neumann dynamic microphone. I want one real bad. But whatever it is, you learn way, way, way back when you're a little pimply faced gospel DJ. You learn a rule that is similar to the rule that one applies to firearms. Always assume that a firearm is loaded and ready to kill. And one always assumes that a microphone is hot and ready to pick up the pearls of wisdom which fall from your lips. I guess in the for-profit media world of professional multimillionaire broadcasters, the microphone rule gets lost because a lot of times it's just this little bit of nothing that's clipped to your lapel or inside your shirt, and you tend to forget that, well, yeah, you're saying what you're saying. I guess. Me, the few times that I've done TV during the break, you know, okay, yeah, oh, hi, yeah, that was fun. Okay, great. All right, what's coming to... Pretty much I shut my mouth during the breaks beyond thank you, yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. Just going back to the way I was trained and raised and, you know, when they give you your cue, 5 minutes please, that's the way they'll do it. 5 minutes please, your answer is thank you. Because that way we have an acknowledgement, no grunts, no yeah, or okay, thank you. 5 minutes please, thank you. 2 minutes please, thank you. Courtesy mixed with professionalism results in hopefully some things working out the way. But again, I guess when they start paying you in checks that have 5 or 6 digits per, maybe you forget that stuff. No, Carol Baker, you do not want to know where the Reverend laid hands on Ron. No, you don't. Or I don't know, maybe after hours or something, who knows. So enter Chris Matthews. Now I played the Brent Musburger perving on AJ McCarron's girlfriend clip for a reason, because it's just about, wasn't that like a warning to everybody? Well, apparently everybody but Chris Matthews. Chris Matthews from the Department of Ew! Ick! They were broadcasting over there at MSNBC the other night. Tuesday night after the Indiana primary or whatever. Brian Williams is doing politically talky things and Rachel Maddow is talking political. And Chris Matthews forgets that his mic is hot when he sees video of Melanoma Trump. That's her name, isn't it? Melanoma. He sees video of Melanoma Trump entering, you know, they're clapping for the T-Rump. And he won't lose his job or anything. He just did this.
Only the candidate can make
and
that
the party
decision.
Will trust Trump to be able to make that decision.
Well, I think the party will have a role in it.
Do you see her watermark? Runway
we just heard from the likely nominee of the Republican Party. We will go to a break here.
I think it was
the discussion continues right after this.
Yeah, I'll bet you're going to a break, Brian Williams. Did you catch that? Did you see her walk? Runway walk. My God, is that good. I could watch that runway show. Whackada, 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 pockada, 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 pockada. Yeah, made Chris Matthews' withered old member jump like a snake in a microwave. Professional broadcasting. My God, is that good. I'd watch that runway show. So, of course, this turned into a further public relations opportunity for Melanoma Trump, and by extension, I mean, that is her name, Melanoma, right? And by extension, T-Rump, his own self. A spokesman for Melanoma Trump said, "Melanoma Trump is an accomplished businesswoman and entrepreneur in her own right, achieving tremendous success in a variety of industries, including an illustrious modeling career, as well as being a dedicated wife and mother. It is unfortunate to see the continuous inaccuracies and misrepresentations made by the media of Mrs. Trump as anything less than the independently successful woman that she is." Wouldn't you love to see her independently successful prenup? Was that sexist? No, that's not sexist. That's business. Tell Michael it was always only business. But in fact, that's kind of a skeevy PR response anyway. The PR response is, why is Chris Matthews, who is supposedly a happily married man, perving all over Melanoma Trump? You know, one wonders if he felt a tingle up his leg. You know, the way he used to feel with George Bush. It was George Bush that sent the tingle up his leg, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. It was, of course, back in 2011 that Tweety Matthews declared that no one could be hotter as a candidate than the half-term, half-baked Alaskan governor, Godzilla from Wasilla, Caribou Barbie, Sarah Palin. But he's still got a job. Because I guess he can still tell stories about how Tipper and Ronnie took off their coats and got the business of America done. Hot damn. We'll add this to the perv files. Now it'll be, hey, do you remember when Brent Musburger, and hey, do you remember when, I could watch that one. And it's not even creative. It's not even creative. I had a buddy, came from southern West Virginia, and when he said, when he saw a beautiful woman, he'd look at me and say, ah, God, if I had a walk like that, I'd walk everywhere I went. Maybe a little bit sexist, but also, you know, paying a compliment. Did you see her walk? Runway walk. My God, is that good. I could watch that runway show. You reckon Rachel went to the VP there and said, no more. Uh-uh. I am not going to be on the air anymore with that skeevy fuck. Nah, I guess not. I could watch that runway show. I mean, it doesn't even have the panache of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and Here Comes My Girl, or with that little bridge there, that little interlude, where he just goes, "Watch her walk." No, that's just Tweety being a skeeve. Let's run over to the phone lines. Hey, out in the Las Vegas area code. Welcome to the program.
Oh, I'm actually in Kansas, but you get the idea.
Okay, in Kansas, Stan, are we, John?
Yeah, you got to move more crap for more crap people. So go figure.
Yeah, right, but, absolutely. Been a while. How are you?
Oh, short, fat, kind of cute, you know, the usual crap. But, that's three craps in a row, man. This must be a hell of a day. But, I thought I'd call because I wanted to get your opinion on something.
Yes?
Something popped through my feed earlier today that some of Hillary's assistant managerial spokespeople, whatever the heck they are supposed to testify in the next month or two about her email stuff. Some judge has authorized it or something like that. The thing that worries me is I just have this, and maybe I'm just being totally spastic, but I got this dog and pony show feeling that she's going to get the damn denomination, and then we're going to get that October surprise where she gets indicted or some crap. And then
nobody's ever going to successfully convince me that she's going to be indicted over anything whatsoever related to her email.
I hope you're right, because I would think that would be, you know, Trump's already had more luck handed to him in this campaign than any three people ought to be having.
Oh, he's already test marketing his catchphrase of "Crooked Hillary," because Lion Ted stuck and Little Marco stuck. I don't think Hillary has the same sort of political instincts that Bill did. Bill would go right back after anybody that came after him. And in point of fact, if I recall correctly, and I could be wrong, I seem to recall somebody writing a story way, way back a million years ago saying that the reason that the George H.W. Bush campaign was not able to make Bill's philandering stick is that the minute they tried the first time and failed, the Clinton campaign got in touch with the George H.W. Bush campaign and said, "Bubba, two can play at this game, because it's not like your guy's been exactly a paragon of fidelity to his marriage bed. So we're more than happy to have that be the campaign. His 20 or 30 years of philandering versus whatever it is Bill does." And George H.W. Bush shut right up because it was the absolute truth. Now, in Trump, we've got a serial philanderer. This guy changes wives more often than hillbillies change socks.
Ah, but Bob, you got to remember, he is consistent. He always likes an Eastern European. He likes that accent. So he is consistent.
Was Marla Maples an Eastern European?
She might be the exception that proves the rule. But when you look at Ivanka and Melania, which is the current one, and then there's another one floating in there somewhere. I remember when
one of his first children, female children, were born, and they were interviewing him, and he said, "Yeah, well, you know, she's pretty young yet. I don't know if she's going to have, I mean, she's got her mother's eyes. Can't quite tell yet if she's going to have her mother's awesome tits."
Well, you know, Yeah, but he fits in so well with the kind of, and I hate to use the term redneck, but it seems to be the most fitting down here in the parts of the country I travel through a lot. I mean, when he won Indiana, I was sitting in a truck stop, and you would have thought that the long-haired, long-robed dude with sandals and a funky beard had come back. the way they were hooping and hollering. I mean, it's like, and I mean, you know, we got to having some questions and stuff and interesting conversations. And it's like, and I am now utterly and completely convinced that people are not voting for Trump. They are voting in spite of Trump. That's my personal opinion. I mean, I've just talked to so many people out here, and they're just so, these people are so mad at the so-called GOP establishment. Somehow a meme has gotten out there that, holy crap, if you have an R next to your name, you are scum. And at least as far as this core group goes, I mean, when Ted Cruz, the flagship evangelical Bible thumper, can barely get 50% of his own base of Bible thumpers to vote for him, you know they're pissed off about something. And
well, no, I said on Tuesday that the ass whipping that Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger eating future king of America, took was proof that the evangelicals may not be the political force that they once thought themselves to be.
Now, it's pretty true. I mean, from what I've read on some of the articles and stuff I'm reading, the church attendance is down dramatically. The demographic age is getting older and older. Young people just aren't embracing religion like the older folks do. And as they die off, you know, the older folks die off, the younger people are just, you know, they may have some degree of religiosity, but it's not hardcore, you know, beat you upside the head with the leather book business, and are far more willing to listen to, you know, it's kind of like the demographics for Bernie Sanders. I mean, you know, if you're below, say, a certain age, say you're below 40 and Democrat, chances are you voted for Sanders. If you're over 40, you voted for Clinton. It's this battle royale here, in some ways, kind of reminds me of the whole Bob Dole campaign, where he kind of officially lost it when he made the comment that, you know, give me one last chance to do something great, or so, however he did it, you know, and, you know, serve one more time. And that was kind of like, it had such a ring of patheticness to it that it was like the demarcation of an era. And I'm kind of reading that a little bit here. You know, Clinton, she's about the youngest one of the old guard that's left. And after that, then you're going to have a whole new breed of, you know, people that grew up in the, you know, the age of Facebooks and Twitters and stuff. You know, they talk about the fact that Hillary Clinton still has trouble using her emails and stuff. Part of the problem with the emails is she is not particularly technically savvy. And she okayed things to run a certain way that was easier for her to handle. So, you know, there you go. You know, the old dogs are taking their last laps.
Well, I hope so, but I'm not entirely convinced.
Yeah.
Because wealth is not generational. Wealth will change a 10-year-old or an 80-year-old.
Yeah, that's true too. I'm just a little, like I said, there's just so much going on in the background. You know, between, like I said, you know, I kind of take your point to heart that maybe the emails are more smoke and mirrors, but you know, when you actually have, however big or small it is,
there is so sincerely no there.
Yeah.
On the emails. I mean, I shut down when I hear it, not because I think Hillary Clinton poops ice cream, but because it is, I mean, there are too many instances. There's too much evidence of Republicans saying, look, we made this up. We did this to try to stop her campaign.
Well, yeah. And on top of that,
I mean, Daryl Issa said it.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but she's not the only one that did it. I mean, this has been going back since before Colin Powell. He had his own server system. You know, it's not a new thing. That I agree with. But like I said, you know, It just bugs me that, you know, if anybody were to sit there and say to me 2 years ago that the Republican nominee will be Donald Trump, I would be laughing my ass off and being like, no freaking way. This guy could.
You know, I was thinking about that, John, and I'm not exactly there, because I can remember back when he was sort of putting out feelers in the late 90s. And I said to myself, you know, this could happen, because I don't underestimate the ignorance of the American electorate, especially Republicans. Okay, they could, had Trump not been there, they could easily have gone for Walker. Had Jebbia made even a cursory attempt at running a campaign, it could have been him. You know, it didn't help that his mama came out and said, you know, America does not need another Bush. It could, but you know, there were possibilities out there. But by virtue of the perfect storm of the things that the for-profit media did to make Trump viable, because they were all about they were all about the ratings. You know, they let him do things that they don't let other politicians do.
Yeah.
How many other presidential candidates get to just call in and talk in circles and not get challenged? Well, okay, I mean, there's a joke toad is out there, and you know, he almost got frustrated last week with Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, because he still is. I mean, his daddy anointed him, and he still believe it. And you know, by the way, don't write off Cruz, because that son of a bitch will be back.
He's already set the stage.
Yeah, he's like a bad penny coated in Ebola. He will be back. Remember, Richard Nixon disappeared after the 1960 presidential election, and somehow or another, 8 years later, he got rehabilitated enough to wind up president of the United States.
Yeah, well, Ted Cruz is only in his mid-40s, so he's got plenty of time. And the decision he's got to make now is every decision he makes from this point forward is going to be based on the idea that he's going to figure that Clinton's going to win this round, and so he's going to prep himself for 2020 and try to come back as the savior, you know, after the supposed disaster of the Hillary Clinton, you know, presidency. I mean, that's, you know, you can kind of see the writing on the wall in that. But I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know, here in the last few months, I've been looking at the alternative media, and I've been really dialing into BBC and South American stations and stuff, looking back at the U.S. to try to get a look at what's going on here through an outside pair of eyes, and talking to some friends of mine overseas. And in the last 24 to 48 hours, man, you've got people from, you know, like especially like in South America and stuff, that are not just kind of tongue-in-cheek laughing, but they're also very worried that if Trump gets in, it's gonna be a wholesale disaster, particularly for people, you know, quote unquote, from the border south, all the way to you know, down to the tip of South America. And it's not gonna be good for anybody. This guy gets in. And now what's dangerous about it is that even though if the polls are correct and he's not going to win, but he's going to create enough. Here's my opinion, and I'll probably start jumping off here, but my opinion is that Trump has gotten away with so much that he's given license to the racists, the bigots, the rednecks, the misogynists, to say whatever the hell they want and think they can get away with it. Your tow truck driver guy, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I don't think he would probably have had the cojones to try to pull that stunt off. But now the nominee for the President of the United States He's saying virtually the same thing. So why can't I? And that's just kind of the way it seems like we're going. And if we keep up this, kind of go back to what you said earlier, we're going to find out just what America's, what the true spirit of America is like. And, November 7th or whenever the day after the election, we're going to wake up and we may not like the look of what we see in the mirror. And, that may well be the beginning of the end of the United States being the quote unquote, leader of the free world, because nobody will respect us. Nobody will, everybody will hate what we stand for. And that's going to have enormous implications economically, politically, militarily. That's going to extract a very high price by some wild roll of the dice he gets in. And as much weird stuff as he said and still got it in the nomination, you can't just discount it.
Watching the Republican convention in Cleveland is going to be interesting, to say the least.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be popcorn and beer.
And, who knows? Who knows how many? But it's pretty clear now that the establishment really can't mount an alternative to him.
They're talking about this guy Sasse or whatever his name is out there in North Carolina.
From Nebraska, Ben Sass.
Sass. I'm sorry, I get his name wrong. But yeah. They're talking.
He's got to stick up his ass, makes about as much sense as any average teabagger, because he is a teabagger. He rode a teabagging wave into the Senate of the United States. From Nebraska, and that's all he is.
Well, who was it that I saw? I just saw it fly by my feet about 6-7 hours ago. Who? What person? What state passed this? I can't even hardly describe it. It's some that it was almost immediately declared unconstitutional by everybody who even did it. It was some kind of a. I don't want to say it's. It's a variation of the whole bathroom thing, but it's something about, maybe I should just shut up about it because I can't remember the details, but had something out of it. It was like one of them, it was either, I would attempt to say West Virginia, but it was, I don't think it was that. I think you're out of session right now, but it's one of these M states, I think, or something like that, that just passed some really goofy thing that had a big, huge argument in their governing house, and they passed this crazy law that has something to do with, just like almost outlaw some gay thing was being outlawed almost altogether, and it just was ridiculous. So if you happen to think about it or pop it up,
there's just so many states that have passed things like that. I mean, of course, it has become clear that North Carolina, by passing its notorious hate bill 2, they've just screwed themselves out of a whole bunch of federal millions of dollars.
Yeah, the Justice Department sent him a letter this morning. They got certified this morning that depending on which news feed you listen to, came dangerously close to just flat out ordering McCrory to undo it or else.
It'll wind up being undone by the courts, but the fact of the matter is the damn thing, that damn bill is in conflict with Title IX. Which forbids gender-based discrimination. So now they're federal government overreach. And they're back to talking nullification again.
Oh, well. Tell Dr. Bill to go slap an axe handle up beside their damn head. That would probably be a good thing to do.
I think that would be a lovely thing. And Dr. Bill will be back on Monday. He's He's been doing a little bit of campaigning lately. You know, he's a candidate for House of Delegates here in West Virginia.
We could just take that new medical procedure where they take the little eggs and they can keep them up to 14 days. Now, if we can just somehow get that to like a couple of years, we can clone Dr. Bill. Maybe
he's got a whale of a stump speech, and at some point in time, I hope a copy of it will go up on Facebook. So you know, we'll cross our fingers. You know, he's got a page for his candidacy. You can look around and find it, and I encourage people to do so.
Well, that's cool. Well, let me let another good soul come in and burn up some airwave time.
All right, John, good to hear from you. You be careful out there in Kansas, Stan.
Well, give me another half hour. I won't be in Kansas, Stan, so
yeah, fair. In which direction?
Yeah, well, let's see. The signpost I'm passing says, "Abandon hope, all ye who enter." So I guess I'm going the wrong way.
Well, that would be either Missouri or Oklahoma.
I'll leave it to your design. Have a good day.
All right, later, John. Bye.
Bye.
From somewhere out on the road, that's our buddy John, carrying a load of freight to points we know not where. Let's see. And by the way, both lines are open, 304-574-8178. Line 1, line 2, the stress line, 304-663-4676. 304-663-4676. We got $150 to raise in the next hour and 11 minutes or so to come even for fundraising for the week. And thanks very kindly to everyone who has gotten us this far. Thank you very much indeed. Oh, let's see. What else? Because there's a bunch. Oh, you probably won't hear about this anywhere else. Because, you know, why bother? It's West Virginia. Forget it. But it wasn't just T-Rump, and it wasn't just Bernie who came here today. Oh, no. We had a visit. we had a visit from one of America's favorite gospel sharps, one of America's favorite hustlers. Yep, Franklin, son of Billy, carrying on the proud, grifting tradition of the Franklin family. He showed up and spoke on the steps of the West Virginia State Capitol. Do let's check in. A big old crowd showed up to listen to him. So he could confirm their biases and their bigotries. This audio courtesy of the Charleston Gazette Mail.
Lift your name on high. Lord, I'd love to sing your praises. I can hear you. I'm so glad.
And Franklin Graham walks out giving a stiff-armed, right-handed salute to the crowd. No, I'm not kidding. He really did while dude was singing there.
I can hear you. I'm so glad. Good afternoon. Thank you for coming out today. Wow, what a crowd. I'm encouraged that you care so much about your country and your state that you've come out here to stand and to pray with me today.
Wow. He doesn't even fill in the blanks. Hello, Cleveland! No, I'm so proud that you care so much about your country and your state. Is this Virginia or West Virginia? Just say your state, Your Eminence.
We're here today because our nation is in trouble. We're in trouble spiritually, racially, economically, politically. And there's no political party that's going to turn this thing around without God. Now, I know this is a pretty big Democratic state. Listen to me. I may make some of you mad. I have no hope in the Democratic Party, okay? All right, wait a second.
Listen to the rubes just cheer. I have no hope in the Democratic Party.
Before you Republicans start high-fiving each other, I have no hope in the Republican Party, all right? The only hope for this country is Almighty God and the people of God.
Yeah, fuck off, Franklin. Sorry, I've been trying to cut back on my usage of that word, but sometimes it begs using. Speaking of the election, he said, "You may have to choose the best of the two heathens. You may have to hold your nose, but we have to vote." Time out. Now, one presumes that he meant that T. Rump is a heathen and that Hillary is a heathen, both of whom are members of established Christian denominations. Neither of them particularly great theologians by any stretch of the imagination, but lay members of their congregations. T. Rump is a Presbyterian. Hillary is quite famously a United Methodist. And he'll get no pushback for this. This is a canned speech. He's probably been this. He's given it 21 times before. He'll give it somewhere tomorrow. You may have to choose the best of the two heathens. And I realize there's a lot of people, it ain't going to happen, it ain't going to be Bernie, forget about Bernie, Bernie's not going to be nominated. Well, you know, as Hillary said, anything can happen between now and the convention. She said that in 2008. That was back when she was wishing assassination on Barack Obama. I mean, after all, she said, we remember how Bobby Kennedy was killed in California on the evening of the California primary. She said that. Anything can happen between now and the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. So one has to ask if the Christian bigot here, Franklin Graham, is referring to the Jewish presidential candidate as a heathen, which I guess is a step up for him simply calling him a Jew boy who killed Christ. And the rubes just clapped and clapped. Oh, they clapped. And they waved their little Christian flags. And they held hands and laid hands one upon another. And they's probably pouring oil all over each other. And somebody brought a secret snake. The rubes will clap for anything. He went on and said, "There are some wicked school board members in this country, and they use the school boards to introduce filthy, wicked doctrines that are anti-God and anti-Americans. Christians can take the school boards back." I wonder what he's talking about. Is it filthy to talk about science? Is it filthy to teach children the origins of life? Is it filthy to teach children about climate change? Because, of course, Franklin Graham disavows the science of climate change. We're all in God's hands, my friends. And using dog whistle code, he said, "Secularism and communism are one and the same. Godless forms of government. It has come into our state houses. It has come into our communities. It has come inside our schools." Which is interesting when a majority of the state legislatures and a majority of the governor's offices in this country are controlled by Republicans. And not just Republicans, but upstanding, God-fearing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, ammosexual, Bible-believing Republican Christians. He said children need to pray in school, and they need to learn about the Ten Commandments in school. Let the students at least read them. We have shootings in schools. We have all kinds of things in schools, and kids don't even know right from wrong. If we had God's standards, maybe some of this stuff would have never happened. You know what? You can't swing a dead cat in Clay County, West Virginia, without hitting a church. A lot more churches than schools in Clay County. And it weren't secularism that had a bunch of children ready to go Columbine on a middle school students with easy access to firearms. And somehow or another, I don't think thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ass, nor covet thou not his wife is going to slow down anybody. I have people come to me and say, what about the Muslim faith? They want to come here, but if you come here, don't try to force us to accept your faith. This is a nation built on the God of the Bible. No, it wasn't, you goddamn liar. Muhammad didn't die for your sins. Buddha didn't die for your sins. There's only one, and that's the Lord Jesus Christ. I don't need anybody to die for my sins. Do you? What have you ever done that required anybody to die? Huh? Yeah, but still, there was Keith Casto from Madison, Boone County, West Virginia, who took the day off from work and said, America's turned its back on God. Things are going wrong. I want to leave this world better than I found it. Then leave Franklin Graham alone, Keith. Harry Linville, a retired mine inspector from Boone County, also, said, this kind of meeting is the only kind of thing that's going to save America. The answer to all our problems isn't the White House. It's in God's house. And by the way, yeah, that was a whole bunch of T-Rump voters there. Don't you think for a minute that that wasn't timed for a reason? They left the Graham rally and headed just a few blocks down the street to the T-Rump rally. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And that weren't no miracle, neither. No. Not by a long shot. No. Again, if you want to jump into the conversation, both lines are open. Oh, and thank you very kindly to Jason for reminding me. No, it's worse than I thought. It was half-dead Fred Thompson, now fully dead, of Tennistan, who caused Chris Matthews to get a tingle up his legs. One leg. Ew. Yeah. So a little bit ago, we had the story of professional for-profit broadcaster Chris Matthews getting all pervy over Melanoma Trump. It's not been a good couple of days for MSNBC. I like their evening lineup. I think the world of Chris Hayes. Like Rachel. Lawrence O'Donnell does a good job. But for pure entertainment value, you really can't beat the right-wing morning program. namely Joe Scar and the meat puppet. No, not by a long shot. Because Joe Scar so badly wants to be adored by the American power elite that he really can't even conceal it on air. Joe Scar and the meat puppet have freely allowed their program to be used as a billion-dollar PR vehicle by T-Rump. And we played clips of it along the way. It's entertaining, if nothing else. We are amusing ourselves to death. Brother Jim down in Louisiana stands trying to call in on the stress line, and I'm not avoiding you, Jim. For some reason or another, the Bluetooth does not want to pick up, but it's connected and everything, so I don't know what in the hell's going on. Keep trying. So hold your calls to line one for a minute. Dadgummit, Jim, I'm sorry, but this just beats all. It's connected. Okay, good. I'll try again. I'm going to play this clip. Rob Reiner showed up on the MSNBC Morning Right Wing Comedy Program. He was there to pitch a new film called Being Charlie. But he quickly turned it into a full-on critique of MSNBC's Morning Right Wing Comedy Program, Morning Joe and the Meat Puppet. And those two, Joe and the Meat Puppet, proceeded to melt down right there on air. Don't believe it. Don't take my word for it. Listen to it.
Band. We gave Bob Woodward 20 minutes.
We said, go for it.
And what he does is he talks around in circles. So the questions are asked, and they're repeated. We've asked repeatedly.
Okay, so then the next question is, why are you talking around in circles?
Right.
Why are you not answering my question?
Yeah. Yes, we've asked that question.
And then what does he say?
He says, I am. Believe me.
Well,
even when
that's not. Wait a minute. I'll be you.
Believe me is not an answer.
Believe me is not an answer.
That's what I said.
Okay. Then what does he say?
He said he keeps going on and on and on in circles.
Okay, and then,
you act like you have some special sauce,
Rob,
that you think we're not adding to.
This is what everybody thinks, and it's one of the great frustrations of covering Donald Trump. People say, you know, you should really ask him.
You should be.
Well, we did. I'll send you the clip. You know, you should really ask him this.
We're going to make him a little montage.
And we will. So finally, you say, would you like me to actually get on top of him and like pin him down with my knees?
Maybe I should stick my heel down his throat.
Kinky.
Is that not one of the frustrations that people always come and say, well, why didn't you ask him this? Well, I did, and this is what he said. It is an ongoing frustration for us.
Well, I understand it is a frustration. Then at the end of it, the end of it, all you can say is,
voters are deciding.
No. Clearly, you have no interest in answering these questions, and it's unfortunate for the American public because they deserve the answer.
You know what I should?
And then end it.
What I should do?
Well, Joe hung up.
You know what I should do? I should hang up on him.
Joe hung up on him. He did.
All right.
Oh wait, I did.
Can I
go ahead?
Can I ask you a question? What's Hillary Clinton's position on a $15 minimum wage?
What's Hillary's?
I'm not.
Her campaign. I can discuss what her position is, but it's not something that will be understood very easily by the general public. But
wait, time out. How did we get from a critique of how Joe and the Meat Puppet handle Trump with kid gloves to Hillary's position on the $15 minimum wage. Okay, two, and bless his heart, he was trying. Rob Reiner was really, really trying. But the real question is, why do you let that skeevy little son of a bitch call your program as if this is the 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Swap meet radio show from WFUK Busted Knuckle, North Dakota? If he's a serious candidate and he's the billionaire he is, he can by God go on the set. And he doesn't. Who else gets to call in? Damn near nobody. The whole point of the program is that, well, you know, they've got the movers and the shakers, and they come on the set there at 30 Rock, and they sit there, and they face the hard, tough journalistic questions as posed by Morning Joe and the Meat Puppet. I mean, that's the shtick. Right? Except Trump, to whom they gave, and it should go on the books as an in-kind contribution to his campaign, to whom they gave free telephone airtime. And you know what? It's hard to get somebody to answer questions when you're dealing with them on the telephone. The only thing you can really do is say, okay, and you pot them down, and you go, I know you're still talking there because I see the little signal light blinking, but I'll bring you back on when you answer the questions. And if you do this again, I'm going to pot you back down. But Joe doesn't have the faders there in his hands. He relies on people in the booth to do that. And so they are. You know, they are a carnival act. They are a comedy show. And nothing's going to change that. But I'm damnably curious about this $15 minimum wage answer.
We can talk about it, right, which is she is in favor of ultimately having a $15 minimum wage, but she understands that in certain areas of the country, it won't be viable. So she supports it when it can be viable, but she's looking for the national $12 minimum wage.
You know,
it's difficult to talk about those things, but that is the truth.
You're talking around it. It's obvious that you don't want to answer the question.
No.
That's what you told us we should say to Trump.
But I did answer his question.
I'm just joking, Rob.
No, I know, but I'm not joking. That's the difference.
See, I told you it was a right-wing morning comedy show.
The difference is, I'm the comedian who's not joking, and you're the news politician who is joking.
Yes, exactly.
See, there's the difference.
You think Trump's a zero chance of...
And bless his heart, Rob Reiner's a hilarian, so, yeah, there you go.
No, I don't think he has a zero chance.
Really?
What would put the odds at? Like,
I don't know what the odds are. I do believe,
it's
however,
obvious you don't want to answer the question. Go ahead.
No.
Well, I don't know. I'm joking again. I don't have the answer. What I do believe is that if he is held accountable and if the press does their due diligence,
right,
and continue, I'm not saying you guys didn't do it. By the way,
I am.
Well, you did. But
no, I didn't.
But now we're back.
No, I didn't. I didn't say you specifically. I'm talking about in general.
So,
and maybe you have done.
Where?
And I'm saying continue to do that. And if you do your due diligence and you continue to do that, he will lose. Because there's nobody in America that would agree with the idea that all Muslims should be banned from the country.
By the way, I just said an hour and a half ago, I could never vote for a candidate that said they were going to ban over a billion people based on their beliefs.
And good. That's good.
And we asked him about that again yesterday, for the record.
Good.
Let me ask you, how do you explain, as much as we like to think that the entire country watches this show every morning, we dictate how people vote.
A lot of people do watch the show, but it is kind of a news show of record.
It is.
Yeah.
That is true, yeah. But how do you explain the millions and millions of people who do not watch this show, who actually like what they hear from Donald Trump and aren't taking messages and orders from us and the media, but they listen to what he says for themselves and vote for him? How do you explain that?
Well, they don't listen to what he says. And the fact of the matter is, it's all just a simple case of confirmation bias. But we'd be a month and a half trying to explain that to the average Trump voter. All the Trump voter wants to do is look and say, God damn it, I see that Bernie sticker on the back of your car. Hell with you, you goddamn socialist. I'm going to leave you here to die on the side of the road, praise Jesus, and drive away.
Well, there are a lot of people who are racist.
Oh, my God. Did you just say that?
I'm not saying.
No, you just said that.
Well, that's true.
So you think that people that vote for Donald Trump are racist?
They're not all racist.
You led with that, though.
No, I said there are a lot of people who are.
Okay.
There's racism in this country that has been submerged for a long, long time.
Right.
And all of a sudden, there's a man.
So he's unearthed it?
He's unearthed a lot of it. Let me say this.
Could this not be about working class Americans being left behind by a Republican Party
that's
always talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
And let me say this to that. There are those that are following Bernie Sanders that feel the same way.
Help me. That's the talking point, isn't it? Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are opposite sides of the same coin. Good God, they couldn't be too. They couldn't be further apart. There's no way they're not even in the same universe. Because if you're some disaffected working Merkin who votes Republican, you're too damn stupid to have. And you've been voting Republican. You voted for Willard Romney, Bishop Willard Romney. And you voted for McCain, and you voted for Bush twice, and you voted for Bob Dole, and you voted for George H.W. Bush, and you're just waiting for somebody to resurrect old Ronnie. Well, you're too stupid to understand the essential issues that present themselves to this country. And I'm the hillbilly elitist. I can say that kind of stuff. But to sit there and spar with the morning zoo crew on MSNBC and try to explain it, the bottom line is, and he didn't bring it to light. The bottom line is that the media created Donald Trump. They've created Donald Trump in this election cycle, but they were goddamn sure busy creating him a long time before. They created Donald Trump when he was jousting with Vince McMahon on the wrestling on the TV. NBC created him with that stupid apprentice program. When Donald Trump couldn't survive an apprenticeship in a goddamn Dairy Queen. And that, well, yeah, if she's the nominee, Lottie, I'm sticking to my word. I'm going to keep my word. It's all I got. And I said that if she's the nominee, I will vote for her in November. Won't make a tinker's damn worth of difference here in this state, because this state is going to be it's going to be a Trumpian hell. But yeah, I am. But by God, Tuesday, I'm voting for Bernie, and I don't pray. But if I did, I would be on my knees begging California to hand her a landslide loss. And let's have this fight in Philadelphia, because I'm personally convinced that she will lose to Trump. Not in particular because of her, but because of the American people, more than 50% of whom disapprove of her generally, and that's Republicans and Democrats alike, and it's awfully damned hard to win an election with disapproval ratings north of 50%. Let's run over to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program. Gizmo line, the stress Hello. Line. Yeah.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah.
This is Nick in Minnesota.
Hey, Nick.
Thanks for ripping Morning Joe. I always appreciate that. wake up every morning to get my day started being aggravated from that, and then listen to Malloy to go to sleep to relax me, then say, well, at least somebody else in this world is saying, you know. But, you know, Joe, he's always like, you know, talking about the, you know, Ronald Reagan working class voters and stuff like that. I think Trump kind of throws him off a little bit because all the other candidates have always needed dog whistles and stuff, but Trump doesn't even seem like he cares about dog whistle, and he'll
no, and that's why, and that's Nick
about being a racist.
And Nick, that's why the rubes say he tells it like it is, which of course in itself is a hearkening back to George Wallace. Taking a message to Washington, going to tell it like it is.
It does kind of throw Morning Joe off, though, because he doesn't expect that. He's always kind of shocked by the whole thing from that, or at least he acts shocked by it. But you know, the one thing I don't get about the program is he always claims that any presidential candidate can call him up on the phone and he'll take the phone call. And I wonder how much time Bernie would get if he ever did that.
Well, it's not so much, Nick, like it's not so much a question of how much time he would get, but what kind of fairness he would receive.
Well, that, you know, but Bernie could handle it. That part he can handle the interviews on Fox News even. I mean, that wouldn't you know, bother him, I don't think. But I don't know if that policy is really there or not or what, but I got my thorn in the side Thursday that I don't think you've ever talked about it. It happened March the 17th. I was reading my union magazine here. Did you hear about this Brooklyn letter carrier getting arrested?
Wait a minute. That sounds familiar, but help me out.
This Glenn Gray's Jr. Of course, he happens to be of darker skin, was delivering a package, and as he's stepping out of his vehicle, postal vehicle, he sees this vehicle taking a sharp turn right at him, so he has to dive back into his postal vehicle, and he yells at the vehicle like, "What are you doing?" And then the vehicle comes screeching back at him, and the driver yells at him, "I have the right of way because I'm law enforcement." So then the letter carrier tried to deliver the package, and that's when the law enforcement guys got there. They were in plain clothes, got out of their vehicle and asked for his identification, and he said, "The identification's right there on my side of my truck." And that's when the officers decided to handcuff and frisk him, and he was taken to the precinct, detained for a few hours. The letter carrier was without a seatbelt, and he told them that his postal vehicle was unattended, and of course the Postal Service doesn't appreciate that, and that didn't matter to the police officers, the arresting police officers. So fortunately there is a videotape of the whole thing, and it didn't seem like he was resisting arrest or anything like that, but of course that was part of the charge. And seems like, of course, the commissioner of the police force was wondering why this particular unit was in plain clothes, because they're not supposed to be, apparently. And the three officers have all had prior incidents, I guess. But
yeah, this falls under the broad general heading of contempt of cop, right?
Exactly. And the odd part about it is, the letter carrier, completely clean arrest record up till then. His grandmother always told him, his grandmother always said, the best way for a black man to become successful is to stay away from the cops, to keep a clean record. So that's what he always took that advice. And his fiance happens to be a police officer, so he thinks the whole thing is kind of peculiar there.
So, with good reason. I think that's the direction we're going in. And what Rob Reiner said there, trying to talk to those two idiots, was true. There's a lot of racism that has talk about, did you catch that? The meat puppet completely blew past the metaphor. Rob Reiner said there's a lot of submerged racism in this country. And she said, and he's unearthed it. No, that's, you unearth buried racism. Submerged racism is underwater, and you can't unearth something that's underwater. I mean, God bless them. Pay attention. I think it's a far better metaphor to say that it has come bubbling to the surface. It's like that one place in a country in Africa where there's a huge lake and there are pockets of CO2 underneath it, and periodically they'll go bloop, and the CO2 comes up and kills everybody who lives around the lake. It's like that. That's what the bubbling up of racism in this country over the course of the last 8.5-9 years has done to us. It's killing us. Because, among other things, it has reinvigorated the old Confederacy. That's why the primary map looks like it does.
Well, hopefully our USPS Office of Inspector General will do something with the police officers, because it seems like it's a violation of federal law by interrupting mail delivery.
One would think, and you know what? There aren't a lot of stories out there, Nick, about the United States Postal Service inspectors, but those suckers have some serious power, and they can ruin your day.
Right. So hopefully something will happen to the police officers, since they've already managed to do quite a few things, I guess, up to the latest incident anyway.
It doesn't always
have to be south of the Mason-Dixon line.
That's another thing about America in the second half of the second decade of the 21st century. We are all south of the Mason-Dixon line.
That's absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right about that.
The South lost the war, but they won the terrorist insurgency.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Well, Nick, it's awful good to hear from you. I trust things are warming up and almost looking like spring up there by now.
They really are. They really are. We might even hit 80 degrees tomorrow. So climate change
being what it is, it'll probably be 100. It'll probably be 112 by the summer solstice in Minnesota.
There you go. And if Donald Trump's becomes president, it'll get that much hotter, since I guess he's all for getting as much mountaintop removal as he possibly can, I guess.
Well, I got another one here to kind of go off on, but there, like I said, there hasn't been any mention of mountaintop removal among the Democrats either coming to West Virginia.
Well, and there you go.
I guess it's just okay.
There you go. Well, maybe somebody can get something. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure if somebody puts an ear to Bernie, he'll say something about it. Cause,
well, he might not want to, just because he'd like to win the primary.
maybe that's right, but there's not enough people buying that he would really try to get people them jobs.
Exactly.
Get them training. I guess, it, you know, it's a good point. If you are 56 years old, you're not really going to get retrained anyway. So you are up the creek.
Yeah. How about at that point in time, how about just a check for the rest of your life?
Yeah.
How about something on the level of Social Security disability for the rest of your days?
That would be nice.
It would be indeed. Nick, have yourself a good evening. Thanks for calling.
All right, Bob.
Bye now. And that's Nick calling from Minnesota. And from Minnesota, we go, well, right here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, and it's Gerald. Hey, Gerald.
Hey, Bob.
I understand you have duly celebrated Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo, ole!
And, of course, T-Rump celebrated Cinco de Mayo by coming to West Virginia.
Of course. You know, I just got back from the rally. No, not really. I'm kidding. I did go by there, though.
Was he at the Civic Auditorium or the Civic Center?
Yeah. He was at the... they were all parked...
Or the Municipal Auditorium.
No, he was at the Civic Center.
Of course he was.
Yeah, because I don't think the Municipal Auditorium would have held all those people. I saw old people and young people, all white, of course.
By the way, at the celebration, how were the drunks?
Oh God, loud.
Of course.
Yeah. But I saw lots of people leaving, probably trying to beat the rush, because the police were ready to direct traffic as I came through there. They were carrying their little kids, carrying the Trump signs, and just made my heart swell. And then, of course, you know, Bernie was in South Charleston. I heard that went well.
Yeah.
But didn't draw near the crowd that T-Rump did, you know.
Oh, no. We got a lot more racists than we do progressives in West Virginia, but I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
This is true. This is true, my friend. But I do know one thing. The people around here just do not like Hillary Clinton. They just don't.
And you know, that's funny because for the longest time, the conventional wisdom was that West Virginia just loves them some Clintons.
Yeah, well, they did when it was Bill. You know.
Well, and she thumped the daylights out of Barack Obama in the Democratic primary in 2008 after she'd already lost.
Yeah. But then so did what's-his-face in jail. Judd.
Well, that was in the general election, but yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the primary of 2012.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. The last one. Yeah. Well, you know, now that I think about it, the last time West Virginia went blue in the presidential election would have been probably Clinton, wouldn't it?
In 1996.
Yeah. Both times.
We have failed every IQ test since.
It's the dumbing down of America.
But really, I mean, are there any independent thinkers left, Gerald, inside the Friends of Coal? Because was it Einstein who said doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, is the definition of insanity?
Well, I don't know if he said it, but he gets attributed to the quote. So.
Right. So here you are. You've been you've spent 8 years hollering about that Kenyan Muslim in our White House. And his war on coal and the job killing EPA, that's EPEEYAY, EPA.
I speak the dialect.
Yes,
you don't have to spell.
Right, okay. Just wanted to make sure. And so they're going to just do it for 4 or 8 more years if it's Hillary.
She's taking our cool jobs away from us because we took the coal. We took the coal away from us, too. And God damn it.
Like I said, is there an independent thinker left among the fiends of coal?
No. I don't. Was there ever any there?
And so I mean, one would have to evolve. Yourself. Yes. Okay.
Okay. So, you know, I think you've answered your own question there.
Yeah. Sadly, I think I did.
You put the ad. Yeah. Yeah. That was quite impressive. You know, I went to my favorite little Mexican restaurant. It's a tradition of mine. My family doesn't like Mexican food. I do.
Rio Grande?
No, it wasn't Rio Grande. It was Los Amigos.
Los Amigos. Where's Los Amigos?
North Charleston.
Okay. I reckon I've never been there.
Right across from Granger.
No, I've never been to that. I thought I'd been there.
It's a little jewel. It's usually not very crowded. It's, you know, you can go in and be seated in just a minute. I stood there for 20 minutes before I got a seat and then sat there another 20 minutes
it
before
was
they
Mexican
came to
the rest- It was Mexican restaurant Christmas this evening.
As the young kids say, that place was off the chain.
Yeah, you're still not hip. I'm sorry.
I tried. I did. You know, well, anyway, I thought the Trump rally would take some of the pressure off, but I guess not.
No, don't try to get in the way of amateur drunks and tequila. Cheap, bad, nasty tequila.
Well, you know, what was it I said? This a made-up American holiday to celebrate an unlikely Mexican victory over the French?
Precisely. That's it in a nutshell.
Invented mainly for rednecks to use as an excuse to get drunk in the middle of the week and speak shitty Spanish.
So far, so good.
Yeah, that was it.
Donde está another beer? Por favor.
Margarita.
Well, how do you reckon you say margarita in the Spanish?
Margarita?
El Margarita.
Yeah, something like that.
Did you happen to notice it as you drove past the T-Rump Clavern? Did you happen to notice any protesters, or did we just not bother?
I didn't go that way. I knew better. Being native to the land, I knew not to go down that road.
Native to the land, I like that. I like that.
Well, I am, I am native.
A native son of the thin but rich soil of Appalachia.
Elk River, to be exact.
Okay, so I mentioned this earlier before you came on. Your thoughts on Clay County?
Clay County. What about it?
The school shut down. They were going to have another Columbine.
Yeah, I saw the headline. I didn't really get to read it, so I will withhold any testimony or any editorial on that because I really don't. I'm not informed enough to make a comment, and for that I do apologize.
Oh no, it's okay. I was just that I couldn't help noting that we might have been overdue considering how easy it is for kids to get their hands on guns in this state.
Of all places. Clay County would probably be one of my last choices for something like that.
But it was a middle school, Gerald. 5th to 8th graders.
Yeah. Well, you know, Second Amendment and all. Because that one in the White House is going to take our guns.
Right.
And he's done a very poor job of it so far. He better get his ass in gear. He doesn't have long to do it. What? 7 more months? 8 more months? Let's see. No.
Running out of time.
7 months. Yeah, he better get it going.
Okay, so I just pulled up the Gazette coverage of the T-Rump rally.
Oh, God.
Let's see.
It's hockey puck time.
It is. Andrew Brown and Lori Kersey are the articles at the Gazette.
Well, but just a second. Who is this Graham guy? Have I missed something? Have I been living under a rock?
Franklin?
Yeah, him. Yeah.
That's Billy's son. He's just working daddy's business, keeping the grift rolling.
I don't do the religion stuff very well. That's probably why. Probably why I don't really know who he is. I kind of suspected that, but I wasn't sure.
By the way, just so you'll know, Carol Baker wants you to know that Jesus loves you in any language.
Glory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I found this paragraph from the. Do you have time, Carol Baker? Do you have time to talk about Jesus' plan for your life?
There's a backstory there.
There is, but I love this paragraph. The only thing more common than the red "Make America Great Again" caps that Trump has popularized were the hard hats worn by coal miners who said they're ready to cast a ballot next week and in November for Trump.
I have no doubt.
They are dumber than the rocks they dig out of the ground, aren't they? Or used to dig out of the ground. That's on me. That's on me. You can no comment it. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go there. I'm disappointed in them. How's that?
Well, I mean, this is the same bunch who gave us the teabagger legislature that by the way, it's a red. Well, I don't know what color letter day it is, but it's a day here in West Virginia.
No more prevailing wage.
Prevailing wage officially bit the damn dust here today.
So just watch the jobs come in now. There's just going to be all kind of jobs.
Boy, we're gonna build 7 schools for the price of 1 now.
I thought it was 5 for the price of 3. I think that's what they said.
It'll go up to 12 for the price of a half of 1 now.
I'm sure. Because freedom. There you go.
Philip Earl Baston, a former heavy equipment operator for Patriot Coal, also switched political allegiance. The 45-year-old father said he became a Republican because of National Democrats' support federal rules regulating carbon emissions, which a majority of scientists agree is needed to reduce the effects of global warming. For Baston, that reality has made his choice simple. Trump, he said, is the only remaining presidential candidate not to support those environmental rules. He said Hillary Clinton's and Bernie Sanders' plans to help displaced miners find other jobs through retraining programs won't work, and he wonders how someone his age can afford to be retrained for another job while still paying a mortgage on his family's home. You know, you want to know what you want to know? I mean, it kind of goes to what I said a minute ago. You want to know how liberal I am? You want to know how progressive I am?
I think I know.
I want to give that dumb bastard a check for the rest of his life to sit on his ass and do absolutely nothing.
Well,
he's given enough to. That man has probably been partially responsible for millions and millions and tens and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of profit delivered to Wall Street and delivered to coal company executives who are millionaires in their own right. This man deserves a rest. Let's give him $3,000 a month for the rest of his life.
But Bob, that's socialism.
You know what? I bet he would cash that. I bet he'd be a socialist in about. I don't think science can measure the short amount of time it would take. What's his name here? Philip Earl Baston. I don't think science can measure the short amount of time it would take for him to become a socialist the minute that first check showed up.
Yeah, I had this conversation with my barber here a month or so ago when I got my hair cut. I'm pretty sure he's a Trump guy because he was talking him up pretty good. But I've already voted, so it doesn't matter now. I voted Tuesday and took advantage of my county's early voting, which is that was actually what I wanted to talk about a little bit. Yes. I was quite surprised. You know, when you go in there, they say, "What's your name?" And you give them your name, and then they say, "Please fill this little card out." And if you are in the primary, if you are a Democrat, at least in Kanawha County, you get a green ballot ticket. And if you are a Republican, you get a blue one. So you take your ballot ticket in there after they verify your signature and all that. Because, you know, voter fraud and need ID and all that shit. So you go in there and you give the nice ladies who are the poll workers your ballot ticket. And they one reads the number off and the other one confirms it. They give you your ballot. And they put your little give you the little your little green ticket with the number on it, the end of it. They tear it off the bottom, and you carry that with your ballot. And they put the other one on a little thingy-ma-bob there.
Now, thingamajig is taken because Glenn Beck said, now uses, yeah, thingamabob. I just wanted to make clear.
Okay, yeah. That holds them in a nice little stack, and the green ones are over here, and the blue ones are over there. And I just made an observation around the room because there were several tables of poll workers because it was quite busy. I was quite surprised at the number of people voting early. It's usually never that crowded at any time that I've ever been there, and I've gone at different times of the day, which to me sounds like it's good. Anyway, I happened to notice the stacks of the green tickets and the stacks of the blue tickets. All right. Can't see any information, but the green tickets are at least 2-1 higher than the blue ones. So, you know, I think
so
back,
that was at least a good day.
Well, you know, it gave me a little hope, but I go back and I think, with this many registered Democrats in the state and so few registered Republicans, at least by my observation, how did we end up with this teabagger legislature that we have? I mean, you know, they basically swept both houses.
Yeah.
And I go back and I think, well, when people sit around and they think that Donald Trump is a good presidential candidate and they like him because he's just saying what everyone's afraid to say, I think back and I say, well, right there's my answer. That's how you get it. Because he's not really saying anything but racist, misogynistic, xenophobic stuff.
Yeah.
And I have yet to hear any actual policies or plans to create these jobs.
No, you will die of hunger and thirst long before you'll hear any actual substantive policy come from the mouth of T-Rump.
You hear a lot of, I'll tell you, my plan is so great. It's the greatest plan ever. It's so great you won't believe it. You just got to believe me, it's great.
I mean, if I told you it would be so awesome, you could not actually hear it, so you just got to take me on faith.
Right. Right.
And how much difference is there, Gerald, between that and Richard Nixon in 1968 saying, I have a secret plan to end the Vietnam War, but I won't tell you what it is unless you make me president?
Is that like the secret plan that we're going to have for our state budget?
There we go.
I'm just wondering, you know. But anyway, yeah, I've already voted, so there we have that. So, yeah, and I feel pretty good about my choices.
Well, you know, there are some new numbers out that are actually kind of interesting. The governor's race is a lot closer than most people thought. It's 32 Justice, 25 Goodwin, 23 Kessler, 19% undecided.
Interesting.
And all of them beat Bill Cole.
I just wonder how accurate the polls are.
Yeah, I do too. Exit polling is different than pre-election opinion polling.
Because I'm looking at one here, conducted by Metro News. It's like saying Fox and News in the same sense.
Well, that's the latest poll. They're the ones who are spending the money.
Yeah, well, Metro News, you know who owns that.
Yeah, John Racy.
Right.
The guy who thinks it's just like being on a cattle car heading to Auschwitz because he can't smoke in his office in Morgantown.
The guy who has ran for every political office in this state and has been handily defeated by whomever he ran against in the general election. Not just defeated, but handily defeated. People just don't like that guy.
Oh, for good reason.
But yeah. At least Cole is running in the back. That's great. I think that's great.
But the down ballot stuff is what matters in this state.
Yeah. We've seen that it doesn't really matter in a governor's mansion because if you control both houses here in this state, all you need is a simple majority vote, and you can do whatever you want. You can make it legal to drink raw milk and pack a gun with no permit or training. What other kind of dipshit stuff did they do?
Oh, Jesus. The list goes on. Are we counting both sessions?
Oh, we made the state language, the English, the official state language.
Which I think is probably the funniest one.
Is as if that were, you know, was there a problem before? I mean, really? And yet,
well, you know, I mean, Alec mails the packet, and you just sign the packet and hand it to the clerk.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we didn't have time to fund PEIA, the Public Employees Insurance Administration, for the state workers, whom, by the way, you know, when you go to work for the state of West Virginia, you take a substantially lower pay grade than you would in a private sector. And it used to be you did that because you had really good benefits.
Yeah, because the pension was pretty damn good. You could retire pretty quick, and the health care was good.
Right, and in the last, well, I guess Gaston-Caperton is when all that started going south, wasn't it?
I know for a fact it was.
So, you know, if my history is, in my mental history is correct, that's about when it started going to hell. That was about the time we privatized workers' comp and all that stuff, which may be something they're trying to do with PEIA. I don't know. But we couldn't fund that. We couldn't get a budget together. Because, you know, nobody wants to raise taxes in an election year. And everyone's telling these guys, look, we're going to have to raise revenue. You just cannot cut us out of this mess. And yet, we still don't have a budget. And if we don't have a budget...
This has real-world implications. There are a whole bunch of pissed-off doctors out there right now.
Right. That's
because
right.
This state is more reliant upon Medicare and Medicaid... probably than just about any state in the union.
It would be in the top five, I'm sure.
And the on the Medicaid end of things, they ain't getting paid.
Exactly.
Which is enough to make me wonder, Gerald, if the whole don't pass a budget thing was intentional.
Well, obviously, you know.
I mean, they couldn't get rid of the Medicaid expansion, but they can damn sure starve the beast.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no law against a doctor hanging up a sign that says, you know, we're sorry, we're not getting paid, and if we can't get paid, we can't treat you.
And rightly so. You know, I don't want to work for free. You don't want to work for free. Nobody wants to work for free, and I understand that. unfortunately, the poor have to pay the price. You know, that's just
right.
That's,
and what
they don't care. You know, they just don't give a damn about poor people.
But they just don't. But the other part, the part that gets exposed in all of that is the fallacy of block granting or giving state administration to processes and programs that are life and death for American citizens. Okay. And, you know, this goes back to the Affordable Care Act. The Supreme Court, you know, led by John Roberts, America's most brilliantly evil Republican, I stand by that, Gerald. Because the Medicaid expansion was phrased in the Affordable
Care Act. I thought that was Karl Rove.
No, but... not by a long shot. Because the Affordable Care Act language with regard to the Medicaid expansion was phrased the way it was, John Roberts was able to strike that universal single-payer health care provision down. So that people in Alabama and Mississippi, Stan, et cetera, don't have access to health care. But in a state like West Virginia, where we did take the Medicaid expansion, we're still at the mercy of the legislature. And if the legislature doesn't want to pass a budget, ultimately you wind up with, you know, no Medicaid expansion, even though it's free federal money. I mean, get that. See if you can sort this out, Gerald.
It goes back to what you were saying the other night. We don't want your damn money. You know, take your damn usurping Kenyan money away and get out of here. We just want to mine coal. That goes right back to that shit.
Yeah, but explain this to me. Help me here.
I don't know if I can.
The Medicaid expansion money was 100% federal for the first 5 years, okay?
That's the way I understood it, yes.
So how is it doctors aren't getting paid even though the federal money is coming in?
That would be in the state bureaucracy, I guess. I really don't know. I don't know the inner workings of it.
Because you've had to cut the budget of the Department of the DHHS who processes the payments? Is that it?
Apparently.
The one little old 79-year-old blue-haired lady who processes that stuff is now on indefinite furlough because the West Virginia legislature can't pass a damn budget?
That's... I don't think people realize the implications of this. They'll get a budget, blah, blah, blah. And I've already seen where – I saw an article where it's likely the governor will call a session here in the next couple of weeks, even if there isn't a plan. I think what it is just a big game of chicken right now to see who's going to flinch first. And it looks like it's going to be Ert. But, I think you said it once before that one card he could pull is just not even call the damn call
well,
back
and,
in
and,
session.
And yeah, I
and
was
just
about,
let it crash and burn, baby.
I was about to raise that. That may have been a moment of sublime stupidity on my part, but my thinking at the time was, okay, they didn't pass a budget. GERT is not constitutionally mandatory for GERT to call them back into session. All right, you stupid bastards did this. Soak in it till November.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to call you stupid pricks back into session on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, and he could constitutionally do that.
Yeah.
And not a damn thing they can do about it.
Or, how about a special session from I don't know, why don't we give them from the night before Thanksgiving to the night before Christmas or the day after Christmas? I'm sorry. I'm tired of this stuff. It's time for it's time for our side to fight back creatively. The age of spending your political budget, your get out the vote budget on stamped emery boards and donuts and packs of sunflower seeds is over.
Well, maybe it's time that the party, the grown up party. Stops taking the high road because that's ultimately what always happens. These Repig Lickens do this shit and, do the underhanded things they do. And then when we get back in power, we fix it all up and we play nice. And it's like, well, it's just the way they are. And maybe we need to stop doing that.
Well, that reminds me of what Mark Twain said about never wrestle with a pig in shit. You both get covered in shit, and the pig likes it. But the temptation is strong, Gerald.
Well, yes, it is. I would agree. You would not get an argument.
I'm kind of liking that idea. If these dumb bastards are not going to pass a budget, and you can't really trust them to get it right, if they do get a special session to do it in, then just issue a statement saying I, GERT, am calling a special session, and the date of the special session is whatever the Thursday before Thanksgiving is, when hopefully all those stupid little bastards are lame ducks.
Yeah.
That's it. No, not the Thursday before Thanksgiving. The whole week of Thanksgiving. Because that, and the week after, because that, by God, is deer rifle, is buck season.
That is a state holiday.
Yes, it is.
I mean, like Clay County, they close schools that week.
You damn straight.
We don't do that here in Colorado.
Oh, they do it in a lot of rural counties in West Virginia.
Yes, I know they do.
close schools. They close churches. Churches become game checking stations.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Didn't they change that? Now you do it online or something. I don't think there are any game checking stations now.
Shows how much I'm into hunting, doesn't it?
Well, I haven't in years.
But. I mean, it was always kind of fun. You hang around the game checking station. And daggum, Billy Bob Dunn got him a 14-point Boone and Crockett atypical. Son of a gun.
There's
a story. Did you see that monster buck?
There was a story going around years and years ago. I don't know if it's true or not, but it sounds like something that might happen. When bow season is in, obviously you can't kill deer with a gun.
You know, but you can sight in your bow with a 22.
Yeah, well, apparently these guys got a really nice buck in some rural county. I don't know where it was. I could make one up and make it sound like that's where it was, but it really doesn't matter. So they take it to their game checking station in the back of the truck with the arrow still in it. And just so happens that they, what we used to call game wardens or conservation officers, now they're DNR police, happened to be there.
I think I know the story.
So he said, "Boy, that's a really nice one." And they, you know, they said, just talking it up, and you know, he was looking at it. Said, "Man, that thing, you know, that's you know, like you said, 400 points on the Boone and Crockett." But he said, "Well, is the other side, you know, the other rack, what's it look like?" And they went to roll it over, and the arrow was stuck in the bed of the truck. Where apparently they had killed it with some kind of firearm, threw it in the back of the truck and stood up in the truck and shot it, and the arrow went clear through the deer and stuck in the bottom of the bed. And I believe that.
I absolutely believe that.
I can see that happening. Well, and apparently, you know, the two gentlemen went to jail or whatever, were fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like the good old boy that got caught with a 22, and he said, "I just use it to sight in my bow."
Yeah. Oh, the stories.
Oh, this state. You know, there's a lot of pain. There's a lot of suffering every now and then.
What is all we have is
caught him bedding down in the back of my Toyota. Yeah. Yeah. Never had a chance. But the thing is, you had to put the arrow right through, you know, and this thing's got 750 million pounds of pull on it.
Yeah, it was probably some, you know, $1,000
set. But you got to put the arrow through the bullet hole.
Well, apparently they were close enough, and you know, by the story. Well, you know.
And now the bullet got pushed down into the gas tank when the arrow went through.
Yeah, well, they couldn't roll it over because the damn arrow was stuck in the bed of the truck.
Right, and you can't take the arrow out or you'll lose all your gas.
Yeah. Hey, we got to get out of here.
People don't believe us, but it's true. Gerald, have a good night.
You just have to witness it.
Thank
you
for your Cinco de Mayo report.
You're welcome.
All right, hey. Later.
Night.
And it is. It's time to get out of here. What a great way to end the program. All right. Fundraising goal tomorrow will be $350 unless something big happens between now and then. But thank you very, very kindly, one and all. And also, thank you, Kurt, as well. Thank you very kindly for your help, too. Much obliged. I failed to mention that from a couple of nights ago. Thank you very much. You're right, Randy. It then becomes leaded gas. Exactly. Really? Seriously, time to get out of here. Let's go listen to Malloy. Have a good night, y'all. Always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night.